because you're jumping back into the gap. I'll let the coach, it's either sideline, two on the side, three on the side. That's off the second cut. Lead the country in offensive rebound.
Hey, coach. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Oliver, the founder, CEO, and creative mind behind basketballimmersion.com. This is the podcast where you will hear real basketball coaching conversations. Whether you are a new or experienced coach at any level of basketball, these coaching conversations will give you practical ideas to stimulate your coaching and make what you do even better. Without any more delay, let's share the game. Excited to have a basketball coaching conversation with Dave Paulson, head coach at George Mason University. Coach, welcome.
Thank you, Chris. Excited to be on the show.
Wonderful to have you. And, you know, we're going to jump right into it. And we kind of talked in advance and we know each other a little bit. So I reached out to you to talk about a little bit of game preparation, not just right before the game, but the few days that you have leading up to the game as well. And we'll get into some of the details that might help coaches stimulate their coaching and their thinking about what they're going to do. First off,
sounds
coach,
great.
How much of a previous game dictates your preparation going into your next game?
In terms of our previous game, like how we played or how the team we're playing played previously?
Well, more your previous game. So if you're coming off a win or you're coming off of a loss, you go through an evaluation phase of your previous game. How much of that goes into the next few days of practice when you get ready for your next opponent? Because the challenge for coaches is obviously you want to improve your team, but when you're in a competitive phase, at the same time you're working on improving your team, you have to prepare specifically for the future opponent. So it's a tricky balance to be able to manage as a coach.
Yeah, I think it's a unique balance, but I think really, hopefully, what we try to do is like how we prepare for a game is very consistent throughout the course of the year in terms of our process being very process oriented. So that we'll review what we did well in the previous game, and what we did well obviously had something to do with ability to handle the ball or take good shots or transition defense or whatever it might be. We'll evaluate what we did poorly, but all those kind of go back to our big picture, kind of our absolutes defensively, offensively. And so now as we're dovetailing into preparation for the next game, we have to do this better, or it's even more important playing against this opponent. It might be transition defense. It might be ball screen defense. It might be attacking, you know, a zone defense or pressure man to man or whatever it might be. Ideally, we've built in our preseason work, hopefully defending virtually every kind of action we're going to see, and hopefully attacking virtually every kind of defensive strategy that we're going to see, so that it's not starting from scratch in the 2 days prior to playing, you know, an opponent.
That's a great point, Coach, about you're not reteaching, you're just emphasizing specific things relative to that future opponent in terms of that week. And I'm sure most coaches would benefit from understanding that. Now, you did talk about process-oriented and you talked about a little bit of routine for the week. Before we get into the specific routine, when you do talk about the process, how much of that process is consistent each week, or does the future opponent change the, say, the ratio that you would spend normally on a specific part of that process? Like if you're going into the best opponent on your schedule versus an opponent that in theory you should be able to play through, does that focus a little bit in terms of the ratio that you'd spend on that process?
Slightly, I would say, Chris, but I think one is funny when I talk to my staff. We're going to have our staff planning retreat tomorrow. In fact, well, what's the best thing that you can say about our program? And one of my assistants said, well, the best thing you can say is that our players could plan the practice. They know what to expect every day. So there's continuity, there's consistency, there's clarity. I'm like, well, what's the worst thing about our program? Well, our players could plan every day's practice. So that there's always the danger of being too repetitive. But I would rather err on the side of consistency, clarity, communication, so that we'll have a practice outline, a shell of what our practice will look like. And even in terms of when we're doing skill work and fundamentals and when we're working defensive segments or offensive segments. And then as we get prepare for an individual opponent, we might spend 15 minutes or 20 minutes in one area where maybe for another opponent, we might only take 5 or 10. But we're going to hit virtually the same areas of concern or emphasis on a daily basis and then kind of tweak how much time you spend in a different area.
That's great, Coach. So what specifically do you do for a future opponent then?
So part of it, I mean, really, it'll start tomorrow for us in our staff planning retreat. And normally we've done those in August, but we have our entire team back. We have some incoming players and we're taking a foreign tour at the end of July. And so we just really want to, you know, we'll do a few more team-oriented practices this summer than normal. But we start from a defensive perspective, what are all the things we have to cover? What are the actions? You know, what are the things that we have to cover in terms of individual defense, in terms of help and recover? How much help do you give? Terminology, you know, if there's guys that you won't leave, that you'll just fake help and stay home on guys. Terminology, are there guys you run off the three-point line? How do we cover different ball screen alignments? You know, that's been one of the biggest changes. When I became a head coach 24 years ago, you spent the majority of time defending off-ball screening actions. But we give a name to every type of action that we think we will see. And preseason practices, when we're playing either out of shell drill or out of 5-on-5 defense, we'll try to guard all those actions. Here's how we guard them. You know, we might have two approaches. Certain cases, we're going to guard it this way, we're going to guard it that way. But the goal is that by the time we hit our first game, we'll have defended virtually every type of action that we will see during the year, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 different times, so that we're not starting from scratch. So then what we'll do is I have three assistants. We're fortunate here at Division I level, we have 3 assistant coaches, and the 3 coaches, you know, have every third scout, so that if we are, we just, let's say, played a game on, well, and part of it varies on what you do in their season. So once we get into conference play, we're usually Saturdays and Wednesdays. So
right, so you have a relatively consistent schedule. So you're saying, yeah.
For the most part, once we get to conference play, non-conference play in the preseason, it fluctuates more. We might be in a 3-game and 3-day tournament. Well, once we get to conference play, it's a little more consistent. And we will, let's say we played on Saturday and hopefully we won. And whoever had the scout for Wednesday, by the time I get, you know, let's say it's a home game, I get done with the media, on my computer is a long edit that he's provided about personnel, about main offensive actions, priorities and defending them. And also an emphasis, and this is one area that I have started to better, is kind of an offensive game plan edit as well.
Great. Now I want to ask you about that. So we'll get into that, Coach.
Yeah, we'll get into that more. So back in the day, it would be, well, play a lot of zone. Okay, well, all right. Or they switch 1 through 5, or they double team the post, or they full court run a jump pressure, or diamond pressure. You know, after side out of bounds, they trap it, you know, or they try to switch and deny every under out of bounds player or whatever it might be. And so that continues. But then also we try to talk about, you know, maybe are there matchups we can exploit or things that they're bad at. But so we'll look at that. And then I'll have their last 3 or 4 games that I'll watch. I'll watch that long edit that kind of like frames my reference point for what are the absolute strengths of the opponent. To me, I think the human brain learns in 3s and 4s. I think you start trying to emphasize 5, 6, 7, 8 things, you lose it.
Right.
So I want to watch all that and say, okay, what are the 3 things that we really have to do to beat this particular team? And so while we're working on all our fundamentals, here's our 3 keys moving in. And then the assistant in charge of the scout and I will meet and figure out our practice and what we want to do. And then we have a scout team. So the assistant coach, either before practice or we might be on one end going 5-on-0 working on our offense or execution and warming up, and he may be on the other end with the scout team, all depending on class schedules and things like that. But now he's installing the other team's offense as best he can, three priorities that we're going to defend, and also how they defend.
When you compete against that scout team, is that live or is that walkthrough?
Yeah.
It's live.
Yeah, okay. It's live. So how do they guard? You know, like, are they down or ice ball screens? Do they switch? Right. They trap? Do they double the post? Do they double from the baseline? Do they double from the pass? Do they double from the top? And as much as we can, we're not going to be perfect at it, but we really sell the value of that scout team and the importance of it and praise the heck out of these guys and just let them know how important they are. And then, you know, we'll do different in our practice thing, but we'll do, even at the start, we like to get them after we've warmed up. We like to get them going up and down a little bit. So we do a transition defense drill that probably everyone does, a 5-on-4 rush transition defense. But we play it in a 4-minute segment. We do everything in 4-minute segments, stop time and score, because that's, you know, we go 4 minutes and we have immediate timeout.
Does that also coincide with what you just said about threes and fours, people learning that way? Or is that more to simulate game?
More to simulate the game. We talk about the game as it's 10 4-minute rounds. It's like a prize fight.
Sure.
And one of the things in terms of like us being process oriented, win this round, okay? And then you get an immediate timeout. Okay, we got to win this next round so that you're focused on the process. So let's say you're playing a team that you're quote unquote not supposed to beat. Well, let's break the game into 10 4-minute rounds. Let's win this round. Let's win as many rounds as we can. By the same token, if you're playing a team that you're quote unquote supposed to beat, you know, last round's over. Focus on this, you know, focus on excellence, focus on the process. So typically though, we'll play that relatively live. You know, we'll go 2-3 trips and we'll stop and then we'll do it again. We'll sub in. But they'll start even in that live segment. They'll be running stuff that the other team runs and they'll be guarding as if they were the other team. And then, you know, we'll do some of our basic shell defensive stuff that we do all the time competing against ourselves. And then we'll do, depending on where we are in the season, we'll do something we might call three consecutive stops, where the first team's got to get three consecutive stops against the scout team in, say, 7 minutes or 10 minutes guarding their stuff. We might say, we might play a game to 10. You know, if the offense scores, they get two, and if the defense gives a stop, they get one. We kind of tweak the competitive aspect of it, but now we're guarding them. We do something we call DOD, where we're guarding and then we're transitioning out on offense and then coming back and guarding defensively. So maybe we can guard some of their secondary actions.
All of this is live against the scout team, right? So the scout team gets to play offense and defense in different segments of the practice. Right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
That's and great. So they're really actively involved. Yes.
Yeah. And it's competitive. So we might, and we try to handicap it in a way that it's competitive every day. You know, that the scout team has a chance to win. The first team has a chance to win or lose. You know, so that it's challenging. And again, once we get in, like, we try not to stay in the half court. My assistants actually, ironically, a lot of assistants think they got to get their head coach to go up and down more. My assistants sometimes think I got to stay in the half court a little bit more.
Well, it's that balance with energy, right, coach? An energy expenditure, right. and simulating the game exactly the way. But I would certainly a little bit more like you are saying there.
I would, you know, but we might stay in the half court early on. But again, like, we might be working half court offense against the team's matchup zone or 1-3-1 and okay, here's how we're going to attack this stuff. And then, but if they get a stop, if the scout team gets a stop, well, they get a point. We might play to 10. We might play to 7. Just depends where we are at, how long we want to practice. But then we'll do what we might call ODO, where now we're on offense against the other team's defense. They always get a chance to break out. We might do ODODO. We might, you know, so we're doing 5 trips.
Right. So ODO represents 3 trips. And each time you're adding an O or a D, then you're adding a trip to the
right, right.
Yeah. No, that's great. I like that terminology. Now, coach, let me ask you quickly, because I've seen this a lot and it's actually surprised me a little bit. And you, you know how I'm big on simulating the game, and I value that a lot. And there's nothing wrong in coaching. It's just what you prefer. But I've noticed a lot of coaches be involved in simulating opponents. And I've always questioned that. And I like what you're saying about you have a specific group, and not all of us may have that specific group. But players do a much better job competing realistically than coaches do within a practice. Is that true? You've seen that and you understand?
Yeah, absolutely. And truthfully, like one of the reasons like we're a little bit better is like we're going into our fourth year. And I think we have a chance next year to have a really good season, you know, so our top guys are better, you know, and we have more depth. But we also, you know, we've established a culture with some of our guys. They might be redshirt guys. They might be transfers. They might be walk-ons. And that, like, this is really important. You know, like, this is hugely important because I think the more that you can simulate game-like situations in practice and learn from them and sometimes stop and correct right away and sometimes wait two or three trips and correct right away and sometimes wait 4 minutes and correct, whatever the case may be, then when you get to the game, it's amazing. They're like, I've seen this. You know, and I think the one thing our guys would say is like, there's very rarely something that happens in a game that an opponent does that our guys don't feel prepared for. And when they feel prepared for things, then they can stop thinking and be instinctive and execute, whether it be the defensive fundamentals or the offensive fundamentals, in a way where they're not like, holy crap, what's going on here? So I think it helps them frame a point of reference to be able to perform. And that's what we say, like our preparation is to put your mind and your bodies at ease so that you can play our game, so that we can dictate, hopefully, our will and play the way we want to play.
That comes back to your process focus,
right?
Which ultimately right. we're focused on us and our process.
And so preparing for our team helps us be us better. And one of the things we always say, like, this game has to look like our practice and not like their practice.
Oh, you that's
know,
great.
And for example, if we're playing a team that, you know, really wants to wrap the game up and play pressure and play at a tempo maybe faster than what we might want to play, or conversely play at, you know, at a much slower tempo. Like, you know, the game's got to look like our practice. If it does, we're going to have a good chance. And if it looks like their practice, well, then they've asserted their will into the game.
Coach, there's so much to unpack here from what you said and some great stuff. You said at the beginning, and we're circling back a little bit, but players could plan your practices, which is both a strength and a weakness based on what you said. But when you're describing your practices, I would think that even though they could plan the practice, the body of the practice is essentially different every day because of how you're playing your transitions. When you go DOD or ODO, those are unscripted five-on-five trips that are basically unique each day. So we're not talking about you're doing the same drill every day that a player gets bored by. We're talking about your players understand that each day you're going to have these segments of practice. And I think that's really important for coaches to understand.
Right. And that's, I think, like to me, how I like to be is, and we spend a lot of time planning practice, but it's like, what do we have to do better? Who do I have to connect with on a one-on-one basis before or after practice? Who's struggling with their confidence? Who do I got to grab and watch film? Who do I need to counsel for better effort or whatever it might be? Or where do we got to spend our time? But if you get to teach a new drill in January, like to me, like, boy, the time is precious.
So precious.
Let's take our shell, our practice outline. And now I think like if this transition defense, if we have three or four different drills or techniques or games that, so we still keep it fresh, but like we're working transition defense every single day.
Right. Because, but you can tweak the beginning of how you work it or the situation.
How we do it. Right.
Right.
But early in practice, once we're loose, once we're warm, we're going to transition D. And they know that. And there won't be a day we miss it. And then we'll go to a shell drill segment. And we won't miss it. You know, some days it might be longer. Some days it might be shorter. And then we'll go defending actions 5-on-5. And then we'll start going up and down a little bit. Then we'll get to our offensive execution. And it might be in the half court early. And then it might be 2-3 trips. And then it might be 5 trips or whatever. But that outline, and we're going to do our skill and individual type work before or after practice. So that once we get going, you know, it's going to be, depending on where we are in the season, 2 hours, nonstop, high energy, intense, and most everything is scored and it's competitive based, and there's winners and losers. And you know, we're fortunate here where we've got a great director of operations and managers, and we can stat everything, and there's feedback for them.
Yeah. Well, it also must be really uplifting to your scout team when they win a drill, because ultimately you know they're competing for that, because that's their big victory. And I'm sure it hurts the other way when the regulars lose the drill. So it creates a great competitive environment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's one of the things. Like, I think our practices are more fun than probably a lot of places. I'm sure there's going to be times where you ask our guys, they don't think practice is that much fun. But we try to make it as game-like as we can. And I'd like to think that more often than not, our teams tend to get a little bit better as the year goes on. And maybe it's because they don't get as stale. But we don't keep them out there for 4 hours. You know, we don't overdo it. You know, I'd much rather go late in the year, an hour and 15 minutes of incredible intensity and focus, and then get them out, than be out there for 3 hours at half speed.
Well, and that's certainly what a game-like environment helps you do, is it helps you reduce the amount of actual duration of a practice, but it keeps the intensity high and it keeps the realistic transfer to performance high. So talk a little bit about that, Coach, as you are, say you have 2 days, 3 days to prepare with your team for the next opponent. What is the practice duration versus intensity? Is it a reduction throughout those 3 days, or is it pretty much maintained, you know, in terms of the duration of the practice or the intensity of the practice, you know, versus the 3 days before versus the day right before a practice? Explain to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the intensity will be the same every day, and the duration will be shorter. So if we had 3 days, we would probably do 3 days before would be 30 minutes longer. Again, it part of it depends on where we are in the calendar as well. Are we in November? Are we in March? But if, let's say, if we're November, day one would be, from day one, day two would shave off 10 minutes, and from day two to day three would shave off another 10 minutes. That's probably pretty consistent. Now, maybe when we're in February, March, you know, we might shave off 5 minutes from day to day because we're maybe not going that long anyway. But I have just never been a big fan of going half speed. And the only day that we'll go half speed, typically the day after a game, if we're on our Saturday, Wednesday cycle, which is our normal cycle for conference play, unless there's like a TV game that switches our schedule around. Typically for me, our Sunday is a day off. It's a day that the guys can go to church, hang out with their family, their friends, we'll do some rehab, and that's it. And then Thursday, the day after a game midweek, we would probably come in, we would do a light lift, we would do some dynamic warm-up, and we might do some 5-on-0 half speed loosening up execution issues, and then do some shooting.
Right, yeah, so the focus is more on recovery and regeneration
It's a dynamic recovery. Right.
Exactly.
But, so I, you know, that's a practice, but I don't really view it in my head as a practice. But if we're coming in and it's not, the focus is not recovery, I want to go intense.
Coach, that's so important, because the literature, the evidence-based literature supports what you're saying. And I think too often...
Well, that's good, because otherwise you'd have to give me off the podcast.
Well, so I will say this constantly, but I think coaches do a lot of things really well that the evidence supports, but they don't know that the evidence supports it. So I think just through experience and through trial and error, you've developed this philosophy, and the philosophy is 100%. And I think coaches miss the boat a little bit on this, that they think the day before a game, you should go really light. And I tell my players that, listen, you're never responsible for dictating intensity. We are always 100% intensity in your mind. I can manipulate practice to change the intensity of practice. You know, like you said, based on whether you go more full court or half court or competitive, non-competitive, you can always manipulate that. But I never want my players to think there's ever a light practice.
I was saying, when you walk in that court, this is how we play. We play hard all the time. We're intense. We're over the top with our energy, our emotion. And that's what I tell them. I'm like, listen, I'll control the duration, but the intensity never wavers. That's kind of my line. Like, come in here, you're ready to go. Now, the duration might be, and it might be the day after a game. Like, we have to work on something. Okay, guys, like, we're working, but we might do it for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Okay, we're out. We're done. Now it's recovery. But because I think it's hard, like, okay, well, we're going to go half speed, three-quarter speed. When less than your best effort is tolerated, then less than your best effort becomes the acceptable norm. And I think that's the worst thing you can do.
Well said.
Yeah, certainly well said. For college players.
Well, I think at all levels, to be honest. I mean, now the challenge for a youth or a high school coach is that they're very limited in their practice time. Like, you may only have them 4 days a week, or you may have them for a shorter duration. So you have to use that whole practice time. Whereas I think as you go up higher in levels, you can manipulate the time of practice because you have a lot more time. But the key to that is obviously that you don't want players to dictate intensity within practice.
Right.
Coach, getting into something else you said, which I want to get into a little bit more, is which I appreciate you saying, is that you name each sequence or each kind of play sequence that you're going to have to defend. So you guys come up with a name for each action that a potential opponent or you're potentially going to see within a game. Now, how much of opponent play calls do you care about when it comes to that? Because we name actions within our practices. Say we have a name for a flex screen, that's our special name for it. I personally don't care about the opponent's call because we're going to call it what we call it when we identify it and we see the cue. But I know some coaches are different on that. What's your philosophy with opponent play calls?
I have really never spent much time worrying about the other people's play calls because, like, we know what they're going to run. And again, you know, and at a certain point, now somebody might put in a wrinkle, but at the end of the day, if you've covered the main types of screening actions, there's only so many things that you can do. And then if it's a new wrinkle, we might draw it up at the media timeline. Hey, they're running this, but at the end of the day, it just gets to Oklahoma action or it just gets to whatever it is.
Coach, in that situation, your players wouldn't be calling what their name is. Your players would be calling, this is Oklahoma. That's what we call.
Right.
That's what you're saying.
Yes.
That's great.
Right. If we do know their call and their thumbs up is our Oklahoma action, then we might. If we get to a point a second time, hey, we know this is. But I think if you spend so much time worrying about what the other team's play call is, I got a hard enough time getting our guys to remember our play call. So, like, I want them, like, hey, it's a cross screen to a down screen. We're going to take away low cut. We're going to toll booth. We're going to get through the screen. Okay, this is what we do.
And it's what you've done since October. So it's the same thing.
This is what, right. So when they get to this and they run this, they're getting Oklahoma action. They're getting the Indiana action. They're getting the Seton Hall action. They're getting the whatever it is that we might call. And then hopefully we can try to defend it.
Coach, going back to a few things. One is you said about your specific preparation that you get an edit right after the game for the next opponent, and then you'll watch 3 or 4 games to get ready, and then obviously you go back to how are we going to transfer that into practice. And I kind of, when you said that, the immediate thing that cued for me was that's basically part whole part, right? Part whole part, that you're getting a part to give you an initial feel, and then you're going through whole games to get...
Yes.
To confirm basically the part, and then you're going to break it down for your players. So focusing on that last part, how much are you giving to the players?
Again, like threes. Like, so for the most part, you know, the individual edit, like here's three things we're going to do. I mean, it might not even be three things, you know, but this guy, if he goes left, he's shooting a pull up. If he goes right, he's going all the way to the rim, you know, or this guy's a non-shooter, or this guy is a pick-and-pop guy. There's no space. You know, part of it for us is our rotations. Are we rotating to this guy? Was it what game was it? Just the NBA game. I don't know if it was last night. I can't remember the game. But, oh, yeah, it was the Cavs game and Cavs-Celtics game 7 and Van Gundy. Somebody on the Cavs rotated to Marcus Smart. He made a one more out of a rotation. He made a one more pass to a really good shooter in the corner. And, like, Van Gundy's like, that's just, like, that's not paying attention to the detail. Like, you know, you stunt at Marcus Smart to stay home on I think that's about Jason Tatum.
Right.
So we'll – about that. Like, so it's not just, hey, this is my matchup. I'm guard number 24 for this team. Like, they're all accountable because we're rotating to this kid or we're stunning with this kid.
Well, and you know, I was going to ask you that. Yeah, Coach, I was going to ask you that because it is such a different game in that sense that you're not always going to be responsible for one matchup. And how much of your film work is done with individuals versus in a team setting in a preparation week? Based on what you're saying, obviously everyone's got to be responsible for everything. But how much individual film do you do in preparation for the week?
None. It's all team.
All team. It's all okay. Team. Great.
Yeah. And we watch. So we'll do, and we don't do anything until truly the day before. So like if we have 2 days of prep, and if we have 3 days of prep, we won't even talk about the other team. If we have 3 days of prep, it'll just be about us. But what we guard in shell drill or 5-on-5 defense, without telling them, it'll be the stuff that the next team plays.
And the smart ones will know that, but by and large, you don't talk about it. You don't emphasize it, of course.
Right. This is us. Today is about us. 2 days before, we'll guard stuff live, and we'll go against their defense live, but we won't even watch film. And part of this is just my philosophy. I just believe less is more. And I just think there might be days, especially early in the year, like, gosh, maybe we should spend 10 more minutes watching film with our team. But I think the trade-off is, like, we try to be mindful of their time. We try to be efficient. And we try not to have a stale, burned-out team in February, March. And I would rather err on that side than, you know, have everything down pat in November and December, which I don't know if that happens anyway. But then you get into the doldrums. And at least for me, that's important to avoid. So we won't watch film 2 days before. The day before, now we'll have gone against, and we'll guard the same things. Like, these are the three, whatever it might be. And maybe it's four things, but like, these are the three or four things that we're going to guard. These are what you're accountable for.
The point that I think is really important for coaches to understand is that, like, how much that we as head coaches or assistant coaches, like, the amount that we geek out on film and love opponent prep and all that stuff, our players don't share that same love. They just don't see the game that way. So if you overload them with so much of this video or prep, like you're saying you try and avoid, then you're definitely impacting them in a negative way in terms of their love for practice and their love for the game. So it's a great point, and I hope coaches understand what you're kind of saying there.
Yeah, I mean, these are the three, four things that you're accountable. So defensively, like, this is what this team runs, or, you know, it might be a secondary break. It might be whatever. You know, and even in our drill work, okay, here's how they defend. So now when we're doing breakdown and skill work, this particular team downs the ball screens. Well, then we'll have a coach or a manager or a grad assistant, you know, guarding it. Now it's warm-ups. But everything, they down the ball screen, or, you know, we're working on our front court guys and we're throwing the ball in the post and here comes a double team from the baseline side, or here comes a double team from wherever. So that there's an emphasis and a focus, like, here's the things we have to do. We might go in, like, we have our whole package, you know, offensively, but here's the three or four things that we think we're going to use the most offensively. And so when we go, you know, the scout team might be on one end learning the other team's offense. Here's the three or four things that we really want to be good at and ready, because we think this is what we're going to need to do or going to be able to do against this particular opponent. And then all that will be done live 2 days before, no film. And then we'll do it live again 1 day before. And then afterwards we'll come in, we'll have a written scout, we'll have a film. The film edit that my guys make has got to be like 5 minutes or less, because I want to be able to get through the entire written scout and film process in 30 minutes or less.
30 minutes or less, and, great.
Yeah, and ideally 15. And we've gotten more efficient as I've let my assistant coaches do it, and then I just chime in here and there as opposed to me doing it all. And then the day of the game, we'll have a shoot around and a walkthrough. And that'll be it. So now we'll shoot around, and then we'll, again, at the end of the shoot around, now we'll walk through. Here's the three things. So now it's the third time that these guys have physically guarded them. Obviously, it's just walking through on the day of the game. And then we'll watch the film again. And so it'll be the second time that they watch a film, and it's the exact same edit. So,
I was going to say the exact same edit. Okay. Yeah.
So nothing changes. And so the point is, let's say they're going to run some stuff that isn't here. Our defensive principles are going to apply, but here's what we want to take away. Here's what we want to be focused on with this particular team.
That's awesome. So, Coach, I got to ask, what stats drive your prep?
Well, what stats? Percentage of attempts from three.
Yeah.
You know, like it's okay. So I'm now defensively, for example. So now I'm getting ready to try to guard this team.
So that gives you an idea of how many threes they shoot, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So that, like, again, I don't know how widespread this podcast is, but for us, KenPom.com. And so I'll go, in addition to getting my long edit, and I'll get the stats all from the website of the team we're playing, but then look at the KenPom stats. So I will always look at the KenPom stats. You know, all of them are significant, but percentage of shots from three, percentage of assists to field goals made. So this is a team that really needs to get into advantage basketball and drive, kick. You know, maybe you stay home a little bit more because they're so predicated on assisted baskets. If they're really low on assisted baskets, maybe be a team that's putting their head down a little bit more and being to help a little bit more. Offensive rebounding numbers, you know, like certainly. But really, you're looking to some degree like, okay, well, what jumps off? Like, if you look at those stats on KenPom, you can say, okay, for the most part, like, I know what they emphasize, you know, by just looking at those stats. Like,
of course, yeah.
They might, whatever, and I haven't seen Michigan State stats lately, but back in the day, they were the best offensive rebounding team out there, right? Or West Virginia, I think, probably would be the same. So, like, what you can just look at that, like, we better put our hard hats on and keep them off the glass.
So it really helps you understand those three or four things right away that you've got to prepare for, yeah.
Right, you know, or they're shooting, like, and the KenPom stats, in addition, give you the national rank on each of these categories. So you're like, they shoot the fourth most threes per field goal attempts of anyone in the country. Or they're 333 out of 351 at percentage of threes, or 3-point percentage. So it just gives you a thumbnail sketch of who they are, what they're about. And then by the same token, you can look at the defensive numbers and where they're really strong or maybe where there is a weakness. So if they force an absurdly high number of turnovers, again, that might drive your preparation. You know, we're always going to be big on limiting turnovers, but again, that might give us five more minutes in that particular practice tilted towards take care of the ball or attacking pressure.
Right. And that emphasizes to your players, if you do share the stats with your players, which I'll ask you in a second, but if you do share that with your players, then it emphasizes to them the value of what you're trying to work on for a future opponent as well.
Right. Yeah, we do. We'll share that.
Yeah.
You know, so like the day we don't have scouts, the day we don't have like a film with our team. All right, so we're playing this team. Okay, you know, we'll meet. Boom, now the scout team might go on the other end. Here's the big picture. Here's what they're good at. Here's what we got to work on. You know, scout team down there, we're working on this here. Come together, we're competing. And that's the big picture, you know, that so that you know, before you get a written scout, before you get the actual film edit, here's the big picture. Here's what we have to do if we want to have success against this particular team.
Yeah, that's great. And I mean, stats are certainly a big help. And I think as players, certainly the analytics move. And I think the one positive is that my players are much more aware of the value of stats because they hear about them more often. So it actually helps me sell things a lot more to them, and in a way helps drive their learning even more, which I think is a positive.
Yeah, absolutely. They're not a be-all and end-all, but they're important.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Coach, just as we start to wrap this up a little bit, I know coaches love lists, and I know that you mentioned at the beginning of this whole podcast, you mentioned some of your absolutes on offense and defense. So I think I'd get a bunch of tweets from coaches if I didn't ask you what those absolutes were on offense and defense. Would you be willing to share those with us?
Yeah, absolutely. Five defensive absolutes, nothing in transition, no shots, deep paint, no rhythm threes for three-point shooters, no second shots, no fouls. And those are absolutes. And then we try to chart after the game, you know, how many points did we surrender in violation of our absolutes. And obviously it's impossible to pitch a perfect game, but those are defensive absolutes. And our offensive absolutes are no turnovers, no bad shots, and no emotional baggage.
I like the last one for sure. Yeah. So that's awesome. And I think what's valuable about what you said is that as coaches, I would think anyone that coaches has some absolutes or some emphasis that their team understands that these are the things that we really value. But going a step further, you said that obviously you chart them so that your players understand how they did within each segment or within each game with those absolutes. And that's so important that somehow you can track it and you can help them understand that this leads to winning. Because it's ultimately we're selling them on these things to say that this actually leads to us being successful. And
that's
really important. Emotional baggage, how do you quantify that one, or is it more qualitative?
Well, you know, we catch them, and that'll be a film clip, or in like, I think one of the areas, like kids look at me like I'm crazy when we're first talking about it, but then they start sensing it. You know, so the most demonstrable one is a kid misses a jump shot and he's looking at the sky and trying to figure out if the ball was square instead of round, or he's shaking his head, or he's dropping certain words that probably he wouldn't want his mother to hear. So that's the most obvious. But beyond that, or like you were open, you didn't get the ball, and you throw your hands up to the sky and like, you know, what's going on? What was me? And you kind of throw your teammate under the bus, or you make a great pass and the kid misses a layup, and these outward displays of negative emotion. But mainly most of the emotional baggage stuff is self-absorption by the guy who misses his shot and then goes back. He doesn't get back on defense as quickly. He jogs back. You know, a lot of times he'll turn the ball over and like, well, you turn the ball over, it's going to happen. Get your rear end back on defense and guard somebody and stop being a baby about it. Or somebody gets beat on defense and they're worried about it because they think I'm going to yell at them, which possibly I might. And now they can't function in playing the offense event. So I think, you know, again, Coach K always talks about like the next play mentality. Like there's going to be, in our games, there's going to be about 140 to 160 possessions a game. You're going to make mistakes. You got to move on to the next play. You can't have emotional baggage weighing you down.
No question. And I think connecting back to how you guys practice and how you approach practice, that there's lots of opportunities within your practice to simulate those conditions as well, so that you can notice progress or you can point out needs improvement areas in terms of that emotional process as well. And I think that's also really important, is that the groundwork for all of that is within your practices. And when you create conditions, competitive or challenging practices or situation where your players are going to make mistakes, then you're creating that groundwork, you being able to coach those things long before the game.
Right, absolutely.
No, that's great stuff. So, well, I knew coaches would want to know those things. And I think even more important is, you know, how you translate those things to your team success. And Coach, I really appreciate you taking some time to have a basketball coaching conversation with me and with our listeners. And I know that many people will be fans of you and fans of George Mason basketball moving forward. So thanks for taking the time.
All right, thank you so much. If any of those fans have 6'9 guys who can shoot inside and out, make sure they contact me.
Or major donations, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Hey, I'm open to both as well, so that's awesome. Thanks, Coach.
All right, thanks, Chris.
Find out more about Coach and all we spoke about today. Please take a look at the show notes for today's episode. I love to share the game and have basketball coaching conversations, so connect with me on social media. You can find all my social media information and all your membership, clinic, and consulting needs at basketballimmersion.com. That concludes today's episode. I know there are so many podcasts out there. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Basketball Podcast with me, your host, Chris Oliver. Please subscribe and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues so that we can keep bringing you the best of what's out there and share the game.